So I've really been enjoying continuing to look at the compassionate scheduling process. And one of the things that's really come out of it that I've seen again is how much suffering or how much dividing is a tool of suffering.
Yes. So just to catch everyone up who hasn't been part of the process, we did a workshop on compassionate scheduling, and there was a set of series of exercises that we did that allowed us to practice with how we schedule. And so you've been practicing with that, and one of the things that you've seen about it is how much dividing is a part of the suffering process. I mean, in other words, duality, for example. It's always opposition, this and or that. One being separated, a sense of separation, all related to division.
It's funny because I hadn't, all those connections you just made are what kind of popped out, because it originally came from seeing how, wow, it's so relaxing and liberating to have the attention just on this, just this. And so I realized, well, that's how it's doing it. That's how it's creating all the stress, all the busy, all the everything is in that split. And then
It's separating. Yeah, it's that wonderful image that Sherry often uses of the blank wall. And then you draw a line, and you think that the world is divided from that orientation of the line being there. But if we stay with the original one wall before the line, then we're in the nature of the truth, not the nature of what has been imposed that creates the illusion of separation when there is only one. And so that, especially, I project you're talking about time, right? And that is what is stressful. It's divided into, you can do this, and then you can do this and this, and then you can, and that process is having the attention split between the division and here, really. It's splitting the here.
Well, that's exactly what it's doing. It's splitting attention off from here. That's exactly right. Yeah. It's shiny object.
I mean, that's what I realized.
Email is a classic example. But so, what happens all the time is like, okay, open up the email, you know, work on this. And then it's like, let me just knock that, that kind of thing. And to watch, Sherry said to me years ago, when I was complaining about weather.com and how, in one of my roles, looking, let's see, what's the weather going to be on Saturday? And all these things that would pop up, And she would say, well, you don't have to look at them. Right. Because actually what I was doing is, and which seemed so like the right thing to do, I was searching out a source of weather that didn't have all that stuff on it. She was like, or you can
which is so illustrative of our process, right? That I notice there is a source of distraction. And instead of expanding the awareness to include that rather than just narrow the awareness to the distraction, there's a way, that's what awareness practice is teaching us all the time. You can be aware of it, but you don't have to believe it. You don't have to go with it. And actually the second point you're making, which is life is going to be filled with all kinds of things happening all the time. And what we're conditioned is that you've got to go attend to this and then attend to this and attend to this, rather than use the facility we have of awareness,
yeah.
which allows all of it to be there
right.
without having to divide it up.
That's
that
right.
is, we are capable of being
Absolutely.
In oneness with many things,
Absolutely. Yeah.
rather than having to attend to it
yeah.
by flipping the attention.
Yeah.
But we're more programmed by default to do one
yeah.
over the other.
Yeah. And to watch how it's like the splitting of attention I project is to, okay, take care of that, because I'll feel a certain way. Right.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that'll be great. Get, of course.
Get it done. Get it off my list in order to have the experience of relaxation.
Exactly. And to realize, you know, this is the Thomas Edison, like, to prove it to oneself, right? That's never, ever, 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 ever going to happen.
Yeah.
Never. So then to me, that creates that really helpful, okay, you know, 1,000 ways in which it doesn't work. And then it really opens the space for, that's a really good description of what you said, the expanded awareness, because there I am going into a sense of this one thing. And then I'm aware of the attention, you know, that this is there, that's there, that's there. And to realize there's the choice to train with this. And if something does come up, then there can be the conscious choice of, I'll be right back.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? Because of, so-and-so texted that means something right now, and that does, that is the, and to be able to be there to make that choice doesn't split in the same way.
Right, because you're not splitting the attention.
Yeah, exactly.
You're using the awareness that can be aware of many things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always like the right tool, right? The carpenter uses the right tool. And so attention can be, if the attention is what divides, then we keep the attention on the one thing.
Yes.
And then you have the awareness
yes.
of everything.
Right.
And you're right, that awareness can catch what also needs to be attended to.
Yeah.
And there's a choice of moving the attention.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't split the field of awareness
yeah.
by collapsing it to just what I'm attending to and using just attention to move from one thing to the other.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, so cool. Yeah. There's one other piece of it, as you're in the way you're reflecting, and I thought how it really relates to another big thing I've been seeing, not everywhere, which is the sense of how, I don't really know how to articulate, but basically, everything writes itself if we just give it the space to do it.
Writes itself
right.
as in R-I-T-E or
yeah.
R-I-G-H-T-L?
As in, comes back here.
Uh-huh.
Comes back here.
Uh-huh.
So that sense of, in other words, joy is what's there when we stop doing everything else. You know, all those things that we say, that it feels like as attention is returned to here, it's like everything else just works itself out. It just whoop, boom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and therefore the word we use is feeling grounded.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, that there's a way in which I project, and again I'm putting words here, and you just tell me if that's the same sense you have, is when I'm identified, well, when I'm identified with being the author of the universe,
yeah.
it's an experience of efforting.
Yes.
Because I have to do things.
Okay.
And there's a way in which I am in opposition to, and therefore feels like a struggle.
Yeah.
Because I'm not with what works.
Yeah.
I'm separate from it, attempting to make it work.
Exactly.
It's paddling the canoe in the upstream,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so when that sense of efforting drops away, and when there's the willingness to just put down the paddle and go with the current,
yeah.
that's what it feels like. Everything aligns and then the flow happens.
Yeah.
But it requires us to be with the flow,
exactly.
with attention on awareness, which is another way of saying here,
yeah.
rather than being in opposition to the flow, attempting to make it go in a way,
yeah.
even if it's the same way,
yes, exactly.
right? I still am battling
yeah.
really hard in
yeah.
the direction of the current.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's so fun because it feels like the more experiences we have like that, the more it just builds the faith and makes it available in the places where no, not here, right? And then he goes, wait a minute, why would this be different than any of these other things? And then it just, ooh, builds that trust.
Yeah, and I think what you're pointing to is that as you practice with letting go, we allow ourselves to have the experience that it's all right when we do.
Yeah.
And then, and actually it's choosing our experience over and over again over the belief. And so the belief erodes.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
And so when we do find ourselves in places where it feels the same way, awareness registers the lack of the block to let it go.
Yeah.
And if we are struggling, then that's the place where the block still exists, right? That's the whirlpool that I'm going to have to bring the canoe around and let go and say, this whirlpool is not going to destroy me.
Exactly.
That's what I have to learn.
That's the, I mean, and that is so fun. That is such a place of freedom. It's like, I'm in the world, here I am in the world. And like, I don't know. I mean, I know I don't have to be in this, but I don't know how else to do here. So I'm going to get turned around and moved in the right direction. I just know it because I always have before.
Right. So it's not that you don't feel the pain or you don't feel the paradox or the longing or whatever it is that that experiences. And somewhere deep beneath it, there's also the confidence that this is here for you to learn in some way. And even if it doesn't arrive in the moment of intense struggle, once you exit the whirlpool, you can see why it was there.
And there's just another example of it.
And there's just another example of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Sequoia.
Yeah, I can relate to the whirlpool thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just being in it. And so... yeah, it's just been a week of. Yeah. I don't want that whirlpool. and so this morning, it's really interesting. I had a really big. I felt like I had this really big insight this morning, and it's just throwing all kinds of stuff in my way to not. But it was. I woke up and I was having a lot of sensations again that want to evoke fear.
Uh-huh.
And I was with that for a little bit and just noticing and, you know, kind of getting sucked into that whirlpool again. And
So a lot of sensations.
Yeah.
Watching the fear.
Yeah.
Or the pull towards the fear.
The pull toward the fear.
And practicing not going with the fear.
And practicing. Although it wasn't that... I wasn't aware, you know, at that moment that I'm practicing not going to the fear. And so I got up and I pulled
up. And Amanda stopped there.
Sure.
Possibly because you're not the somebody who's afraid. There's no sense of me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the one who's afraid, not the one who's practiced. The I is not practicing, not trying to be afraid, right?
Uh-huh.
Isn't it true, right?
Because I have been looking at that too. Mm-hmm. You know, that there's something that's afraid, and there is no fear.
Yeah.
And then you know, get identified with that, whatever it is that's so fearful.
Yeah.
And so.
Sorry, that didn't throw you off track.
But, you know, it's true. You know, I've been looking at that too. But so I pulled a Universe Faith Creating card for the morning, and I got intuition.
Uh-huh.
And right on the heels of that, I got slammed with more stuff like, your intuition's telling you that this is some, you know, this is horrible, and, you know, and just feeding more fear. And and then I just had this experience of it dropping in that what was needed more than anything is that let's just talk about letting go and letting things right themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Just whatever is going on to just stop.
Mm-hmm.
And sit and let whatever is happening just happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and wherever it's going, just be with it.
Mm-hmm.
and stop, you know, just to not fight it. And I realized that at that moment it's like, that is the greatest contribution to make on all levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is to stop that struggle and to sit and to just be with love.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in that, it feels like everything is in love. And it's not like, it's not coming from a place of trying to make it okay for.
Yeah.
It's coming from some bigger place that, you know, it's like, it's almost like the outcome isn't that important for the human being, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but it is really important for everything.
Uh-huh.
If that makes sense. But
well, sort of. Let's clarify that a little further, but let me catch up with you, because I think there's so much in what you said, right? First of all, there's a way in which the entire thing is practice,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's the observation of the sensation, the movement towards fear, the whatever it is that you're watching that's tuned in enough to be able to pull a card from the RL deck,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
To get your intuition.
Mm-hmm.
And to watch the process that comes in and says, intuition is telling you that there's something really wrong with you. And looking at, maybe that's not intuition, right? And then sitting with it for the intuition to arrive in the form of that insight,
mm-hmm.
that what you just need to do right now is to surrender.
Surrender, yeah.
Right? Just give in. Mm-hmm. And things will take care of itself. And it came to you so beautifully. Wait for it to write itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about that whole process as a beautiful unfolding of everything we talk about all the time, right? Mm-hmm. That which is seeking, that is intelligence, knowing how to mentor intelligently,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and it's true, right? The process that intuition solved for,
mm-hmm.
is the recognition that when I'm within the system,
mm-hmm.
there's no way I can fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? So I can fix this is absolutely accurate,
mm-hmm.
because the eye of the illusion, fixing it is that there is nothing to fix.
Right.
And so attempting to solve the problem from within that space, the only exit is to get out of that space. And I can't do that.
Yeah.
So, something does it.
Something
right?
does it, yeah.
And that is never identified as me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The ego is there, swimming around thinking, oh my God, I have to get out of this situation.
Yeah.
I want to fix this place of fear. It feels so uncomfortable. What do I do to get out of it? Without realizing that it's the issue.
Yeah.
And so somehow or the other, we find the process by redirecting the attention to exit the very process that's causing the issue. And it feels like something other than me,
mm-hmm.
pulled me out of this.
Mm-hmm.
Or something other than me talked to me about how to let go.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that is the miracle we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Because as long as I'm identified in that very small place, I'm not identified with all of what is there that is also me.
Hmm. 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 Yeah, that's great. And also, it eliminates all the.
Yeah.
It eliminates expanded awareness.
Exactly. And if I'm in expanded, if attention is on expanded awareness,
mm-hmm.
I'm not in the place of fear.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm in the place of fear, something, and that's the mysterious that we don't have words for,
mm-hmm.
flips us from a collapsed awareness to an expanded awareness,
mm-hmm.
and then everything is a different experience.
Yeah.
And so say more about why it feels like it's a bit.
It just feels like, it just felt like, let's see, the place to, I don't know how to put it in words, but it felt like the place to rest the attention is on love.
Yes.
And that felt like the doorway out and that art in. And that is like the greatest service a human can perform, it seems like, is to keep the attention on that, on the process of unconditional love.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it feels like it's an act that's done for not just an I, but for all of life.
Yeah, you're right, it's very hard to put in words.
Very hard to put in words. So,
because what I project you're saying, right, I mean, one way of saying it, the conditioned way of saying it, could be that if my attention is not on me, mm-hmm. then there's a way in which everything else is the object of my love. Mm-hmm. So if I, for the love of all of this, there's a way in which I will do what I won't do for me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But in that place you're talking about, if I'm in the process of love, there isn't a me and there isn't another person. We might experience it that way, that there is a me and there is another person. But what you're in is a process of love, of unconditional love. And that's right. It is beneficial to all because the all is what it is.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's really hard to put into words a subjective experience that includes everything because we have language that is very objective.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it is true in the content sense that if my attention is on love, then I'm going to come from love. And clearly, whatever form that is directed to, that's right. Service to, because it won't harm that form.
Yeah.
And I'm not coming from a place of separation, I'm coming from a place of connection.
Yeah.
And so that's service to all, but service to this too. Mm-hmm. This isn't excluded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just saw that all of this, this workshop that I've been in about, the body and sensations and blah 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 is actually a workshop on freedom. Mm-hmm. And it just felt so this morning started out with being told that my intuition was horrible and then it just kept going until it was just really, really clear intuitively, that this was about it was about really breaking through that fear and embracing unconditional love, no matter what.
So you've been going through a workshop that has been very much about the body and a lot of fear around what it means when the body, something happens to the body, Because what we do is we identify with the body. So if something's wrong with the body, something is wrong with me. But what you're experiencing in the workshop is, well, actually it's a workshop in freedom, because fear is just a sense of separation. And what I'm moving towards is having attention on love, which is freedom, in which well-being is not conditional on anything.
And I noticed these things. I mean, that's what I was given this morning,
Exactly. Not a permanent state where you kick the bucket of fear and we'll revisit it again.
Yeah, I sure wish it was, but anyway,
Yes, we do, but I think what we often talk about it is preparation for the final death, right? Mm-hmm. If we've died a number of times between now and then, then it's just another death.
Right.
Right.
Right. Oh, I've been there, done that.
Yeah. Right? I can focus on the living now.
Yeah. So, and I have to say, then as I went out the door, I thought, oh, well, I'm just going to pull one more card.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I got to pull one more card, to just see. And I pulled the card of freedom.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that makes you religious.
That makes you one religious, I was going through and I go, well, if I pull the freedom card, and boom, so there it was. So it's just really,
You know, this is a weird thing to say in a meditation hall, but I don't know if you've heard of the author Philip Pullman.
Yes.
So the theory is that the universe is full of intelligent particles that is constantly talking to us, right? Mm-hmm. It arranges, you ask a question, why wouldn't you get an answer?
Yeah.
An answer that would be helpful.
Yeah.
What else is that? But what else is the mentor?
Wow. Yeah. And I had forgotten this part too. When I woke up and I was having the fear and the, you know, sensations, I think I turned on a Project Joy.
Uh-huh.
And there was talk on Project Joy about ask and you shall receive.
Mm.
And I went, oh, yeah, okay. I guess, yeah, you could try that, you know. And that was before I went into asking, you shall receive, and I went into asking, and then that's the
And you got in space.
And I got in space, so anyway.
I love that. To me, that is the most marvelous spiritual experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a lived sense that the universe is alive.
Yes.
And talking to me.
It's really fun. Yeah.
And to me, it is.
Uh-huh.
Right? When I'm at that place, that sense of aliveness is to experience the aliveness of everything.
Yeah.
Birds and trees and flowers and conscious awareness and.
Yeah.
It's really a good question. Is the universe alive? If the answer is yes, well.
Yeah,
it's tremendous.
It's tremendous. It is absolutely.
Some part of that aliveness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So. Delicious way to live.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Kevin.
So much in what's been said already. I've been looking, I guess, at how I got here. So it's something about, I've been having an experience today, it's like a religious type experience as well, right? Of all the sort of whirlpools and hurricanes and all of it that sort of has brought me here to this like experience of loving and being in the process of connection and alignment in a way in my life that I've never experienced before. And that it's all predicated on everything that happened before.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure people actually said to me along the way, it all makes sense sometime, maybe you did. And it just seemed at the time, I'm sure, like such a horrible platitude. And it's so true. And it just brings me to that place of like the farmer who loses the horse or whatever. And it's just, I have to throw my hands up in marvel and just, what? Like, I end up in gratitude for all of it.
Yes, and you have to have that experience for yourself.
No,
otherwise you're punching the person in the face and telling them that this is something else. And hopefully I didn't say that.
Yeah. I'm sure, maybe it wasn't you. I don't remember.
That's not right.
In the face, so.
Yeah, but the point is true, right?
Yeah.
It may not be helpful in the moment to hear it, but it's the trajectory of our experience.
And that it's it was necessary.
Yes.
That it was for whatever amount of learning and whatever process of awakening is beginning, it was built upon that suffering.
Yes.
That it's not just a having survived the storm and now, like this is so great on the other side. It's like, no, what is great now is because of the storm.
Right.
You're
making a very subtle distinction, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because there are experiences that you go through something tremendous, like a whirlpool, and there's the relief of not being in the whirlpool, which is one experience.
Mm-hmm.
But the experience you're pointing to is that the tremendous gratitude for the process of transformation that's alchemical, that that is a necessary part of true freedom. It's not relief from feeling bad or suffering. It's the arriving at being a butterfly that's able to fly once the caterpillar has been transformed. Mm. Right? It's a very different experience. And you realize that the process we go through in the crucible is essential and necessary for the freedom we experience outside of the crucible. And so it really reinforces there was nothing wrong with anything.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, and
it's the humility.
Mm-hmm.
That I need.
Oh, deeply.
Yeah, that's right, right? That I recognize that something bigger than me was working on me for me to get here. Mm-hmm. And while I screamed and kicked through the process, mm-hmm. now I'm grateful for whatever it was.
Yeah, I mean, right, even the biggest whirlpool, right, of them all, the belief that there's something wrong with me, that was such a teacher, right? So it was that it's not only the conditions of life right now for this person, not only could they not have come to manifest had I gone down any number of other pathways, right? Like if all that suffering hadn't have happened, I would have gone any number of other ways, but I ended up here. But not only that, but I am prepared, and the tools I have now are such that I could only have arrived by them through that experience. And not just the tools, but the orientation, right? I think about, so the physical health things that have been going on for me for some time, it really started here, and then the whole process of then, whatever it is, like the body can't do things it used to do, and coming to a place of, like, loving toward the body, of just like, I'm going to help you do what you can do, and whatever it is just such a, I mean, it's just an example of it, right? This orientation that was sort of hard won,
yes,
through the suffering of this kind of, at least in my better moments, this unconditional love.
Yes. Well, and you could say in some way that we were so far away from love that was the suffering. Right? And what had to be worn away to be able to be in that loving orientation. That's what is hard won. That what we dropped in the process was an orientation of there's something wrong with you, the punishing, the whipping, the self-hatred towards this life force.
Mm.
And that's what gets worn away to come to, yeah, there's a way in which this life force can be loved and honored unconditionally.
Yeah. And to see now, you know, I think the masterstroke, right, is not to then go to a place of self-hate around all that came before. So if I can stay with the gratitude for all that came before, because it's so, there's like a, it's like balancing on an edge, right? Because it could so quickly go to, it wanted to come in right then when you said that, of like, and how could I mean, it's like it's an act of service to love, because it's not me, right? It's like, it's life. Mm-hmm. It's an act of love to life, to love this being and sort of steward this experience of the world in a way, and to have been so cavalier and crass and unkind for so long. Again, it just brought me here.
Yeah.
Well, but there's that balance on that edge, because it wants to come in and say, like,
yes,
like, well, all of the things.
Yes. Right, so reframe it for you a little bit. What we go through is a process of getting to love, right?
Mm-hmm.
And love for this being, for this body. Love is an orientation rather than self-hate is an orientation. Mm-hmm. But part of the process of coming to love is to disidentify from self-hate being the self. Mm-hmm. And so the way in which it wants to control us is to re-identify with the self-hate by saying that's who we are. And so when we come out of that process to that place where we can see an orientation of love and love is what we are, then the way it tips us back from that orientation is, well, then how could you have whatever? But trying to reestablish the re-identification with what you're not. And so the practice becomes different. There's the initial phases of practice is being the self-hate being eroded till we get to the place of recognizing the love that we are. Then from that point onwards, it's to stay in the love that we are rather than re-identify with the self-hate that wants to, mm-hmm. to take away that orientation.
Yeah, no, that really lands. Because with this experience today, there's also this a sense of, God, I hope I can remember this when the content goes awry, which it will, right? Or like when the health things aren't so pleasant anymore, like whatever, when the aura is familiar or whatever it is. And that place of like, because you have the farmer who lost the farm. I mean, the whole story is just a nice story. And then, like, something happens, and, man, I don't want it to happen. Like, I don't want this thing to have happened, you know, whatever it is. And so it seems that identification for me, for this person, seems to arise almost immediately on the heels of something that I don't want happening or not happening, right?
So, how do you practice with that? Have you practiced with that?
Yes. I think I kind of white knuckle it right now. Right now. Yeah. So, like, for a little while.
Right.
For, you know, a couple of hours, a couple of days, whatever.
I mean, I'll bring something else up with white knuckling it.
But and then it gets to a point where then, like, then practice can happen. So it might only be a few hours.
Right, but here's the thing, right?
Yeah. There is a moment of like, ah.
Yeah, because what the process that you've arrived at is to love this body no matter what's going on for it. Mm-hmm. Right? It's unconditional. So through the hard times and through the good times, there's the ability to be with whatever it is that's going on. Right? What we're told is the unpleasant circumstance will be so unpleasant that all I will experience is unpleasantness. But what you're experiencing right now is the ability to be with this life force in love, no matter the circumstances. So there's no requirement to white knuckle it, because what we can then say in the moment is, it doesn't matter what happens, because I can be in love with it.
Well, that's exactly it, though. It's like, it's when I'm not identified, I can say that.
But that's the caveat. But that's what you have to keep. What Sherry says, right, we live in the conversation of negativity. We want to replace that negativity with what's mm-hmm. true. And so it's constantly going to come at you to say, well, in the next unpleasant circumstance, Kevin, you're going to get hyper-identified. And if that circumstance, it's not the circumstance that's going to happen, but the circumstance that's happening now that you need to be with him for. Mm-hmm. And so he would say, yeah, that the worst is being projected right in this moment. Mm-hmm. And instead of listening to the worst that's being projected, I'm going to turn my attention to loving this human being and being with this human being, because that's the only quality that I need to be skillful in. If I'm skillful at being here, no matter what this is saying, because the worst is always in what it says, not in the circumstance. Mm-hmm. Right? Circumstances can be really, really painful, and you can be with them. You've proven that to yourself. It's what the voices are going to do with those circumstances that are really, really horrific. Mm-hmm. And so there's a way in which I have to train myself to know that I won't abandon love. And you can't do that in abstract.
And that I won't be abandoned by love even if I go kicking and screaming. That's
right, but that's again the identification talking. So again, you pick up the recorder and listen to yourself saying that. You can watch the oscillation of the identification, right? Because that didn't come out of the person who just told me that they found love and are feeling grateful. There is the person identified with the fear that they will be abandoned is not the person who just experienced the gratitude that they came through such whirlpools, right?
Right, yes, which I think was what I was attempting to point to, is that even if I get identified and think that I'll be somehow abandoned by love, that there's a knowing that that's not possible.
Which needs to be told to him over and over again.
Yeah, it leads me to, I think what I was seeing is maybe just to do this thing and then drop this and come back, like not to noodle with this too much, but I was just seeing that it might be such an assistance to this person to make a recording of the insight I'm having of how incredibly grateful I am for all of what has come, even though it didn't always seem apparent at the time. In the event that content goes awry, hypothetically, that life won't always be perfect, and that would maybe be a great assistance.
That's right. That to remind yourself that you were grateful for all the suffering that came, so for all the suffering that is to come, maybe you'll be grateful also.
Yeah.
And it's not gonna, I mean, it's, you know it, and that's why I think it preys on you, because that's intelligence. Intelligence knows that life is not going to be a picnic. So that's the truth. I'm ready to face that. Something else doesn't want me to face that. But that's not the intelligence that can ride anything that shows up and has.
Yeah, it wants me to deny that it will not always be a picnic and create a hell at the same time.
By trying to create, by avoiding it. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Anna.
What was bubbling up before grief and is kind of bubbling up as I'm sitting here is just how much I'm enjoying life.
Yes.
And there are kind of all sorts of things that go into that, all sorts of ingredients. And, you know, I realized, so I had been doing, I'd been practicing with the guide's suggestion of what am I loving best in this moment. Right? And I've been really practicing with that kind of constant devotion. I realized I hadn't been doing that for a while. And I realized that there was an awareness that there was not like that kind of open joy, pleasure quality to my experience. And I realized, I haven't been practicing with that focus of attention. What am I loving best about this? That kind of enjoyment. And so I was kind of turning attention to that last night about, okay, so there's a feeling of, you know, when the weather's colder, there's a sort of a sense of closeness or contraction that I can be in the cold. And it was like turning attention to, well, what kind of pleasures is life offering right now in this season, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, just like all the different kinds of darknesses, right? And all the moon changes, and just how completely delicious and amazing that is, and all the different types of mosses and lichens, and it was just so lovely to kind of feel myself be guided back to that enjoyment and
Well, all of that is so much an awareness practice, right? So first of all, to take the guidance and to practice with it.
Mm-hmm.
Then to notice the quality of experience in awareness, that there is a shift in that quality.
Yes.
Then to notice why there's that shift in the quality, and it's, oh, well, I'm not in the process of enjoyment.
Yes.
No wonder I'm not enjoying anything. Right? And so then to ask the question, intuition, right? It's what when we practice awareness, we're actually honing the calibration to awareness, right? Awareness aware.
Yes.
And awareness aware of awareness.
Yes.
And so, yeah, so then let me look at what it is that I love about this moment.
Right.
And that opens us up to registering, not contraction,
yes,
but all of the things in awareness that we love. So I'm in a process of love, and instantly we go from closed to open.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? And to delicious, and the quality of the experience changes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I just love the way you described that, and what I heard in that is that, so awareness registers the contraction, and the kind of automatic condition group is to look to the mind for what the problem is.
Yes.
So for the effect, to look for a story about the cause. Well, it must be something that's happening in my life, or something that I did or said, or something that is wrong. And instead, to what I heard and what you reflected was, is like moving deeper into awareness, or moving out, yes, into awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And it
is the training, right?
Yeah.
It's like,
yes,
there's a training for someone to intuitively switch the track,
yes,
of attention.
Yes.
Because there's an awareness that the train is headed in the wrong direction.
Right. Well, the way I heard you describe it, it's a train to recognize when there's a collapsed awareness, to practice,
exactly,
you know, letting it expand again. And it's just, and there's such joy in that process. I think that's the experience of enjoying life, like getting to live in that.
Yes. Because I would project that it's not a what, it's a how, right?
Yes.
Because you could turn your attention to mosses and lichens and shades of darkness and feel so cold and miserable. Right?
Yeah.
But that's not the point.
Uh-huh.
Because I would say that if we train the awareness, then we know that I'm cold and miserable,
yes,
is really a conditioned mind judgment of,
yes,
that experience.
Yes, and it's a thought, and it will want to go on about
that, right,
again and again.
And
I'm cold and miserable.
It is. Yeah. And so it's what Jen started us off with, is if it's what we learn to get more skilled at, mm-hmm, is not to have the attention split between the conditioned story and awareness.
Mm-hmm.
I have to practice wholeheartedly having my attention on the delight of mosses and lichens,
yes,
in order not to be cold and miserable.
Yes.
Right? I have to fall into that experience.
Yes.
And until I do, the attention is split.
Yes.
It is still referencing something wrong with the cold and the miserable, which is the contraction that I register.
Yes.
The contraction is a registration of collapsed awareness,
exactly,
not of something wrong.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's the
enjoyment, right? I can watch it.
Yeah. And it's like the joy of tuning into the aliveness of life when it's cold.
Yes.
But it's the aliveness of the universe. You know, and like it's like a different experience of calibration.
Right, it's a different frequency.
A different frequency, exactly.
Yeah.
So you know, it's almost like
the moss thrives when a human can't. It temperatures of -32°C,
right,
32°, whatever. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And because the awareness that goes with that is that. This is before the retreat. I was writing a love letter and realized that there was a thought about the absence of the experience that had been there when I would do the I love you tree, do you love me?
Uh-huh.
Right? So it was, I noticed the, something seeking for that experience
and not finding it.
Mm.
And so this sense of something missing, maybe something not working, those kind of thoughts. And what the intelligence revealed was that what's turning to ask, I love you, tree, do you love me, is it. And so no wonder it would set it up as a subject looking for an object, and this subject used to be able to find it but can't anymore, and what's going on with that, and instead to point to what's turning to ask, I love you tree, you love me, is it. And so it was again that different calibration, that different frequency to the experience.
Well, and I mean, gosh, if anyone heard us talk about it, people, go do something to do rather than watch what's going on in your head. But it is that very subtle place, and you have to be really, really still to be able to distinguish every nuance that you just said, right? Because it's really a question of where, it's what Sherry said at the end of the retreat, where are you getting this information?
Yeah.
And so it's so not a noodling process. So here you are writing a love letter, awareness registers, awareness registers a certain experience. A difference in the experience.
Yes.
And so then there's that intuition of, well, what is seeking for that experience is the love that is seeking, rather than what the mind sets it up as. It's the experience of connection comes from a feeling. When I ask the tree whether it loves me or not, and that feeling is missing.
Exactly.
Right?
Uh-oh.
That whole orientation. But to have the intuition to recognize that the feeling or experience is what's having the experience.
Yes.
And so redirecting the attention to that.
Yes.
Not to the absence or not to the object.
The experience as an object.
Yes, the experience is an object, but to have the subjectivity of the experience requires a redirection of the attention to the source of the feeling. Right? And so it is so subtle, it is unbelievable. But to get that, it's to get what I am is happiness.
Right. Which is why that drops in together with, okay, it's like the what turns to look for pleasure and enjoyment on a cold night is
it. Pleasure and enjoyment. But so seeking happiness, I think someone says this. Seeking happiness is not a mistake, because happiness is what we are. The confusion is to seek it outside of ourselves, right? Within quotes, into looking in the wrong place for it. And as soon as you do that, right? As soon as the awareness registers it's here, that which is looking for it is what it is, then the missing falls away.
Exactly.
Because the gap of separation drops. Right?
Yeah.
Those words are clumsy, but that's the experience.
That's exactly the experience. And then it's not that I have stopped asking, I love you, tree, do you love me? It's just that there's there isn't the self-consciousness of, is it going to happen this time? Like, how much is that feeling going to be there? Am I going to
Yeah.
It's just, it's more relaxed.
Yeah.
Or,
well, there's no pressure on the tree.
There's no pressure on the tree!
You know?
No, because what it's brought is the orientation of the tree is what gives it to you.
Exactly, exactly. Because that was, yes, exactly. That just the way that life reveals, and the mentor just says, hey, you know when you have that experience when the tree, you feel the tree loving you? Well, find it here. Yeah, and
we can very quickly calibrate to a movement away from that.
Uh-huh.
As absence.
Yes.
Which just tells me the attention is in a different place.
Yes.
That's
exactly.
All.
That's all.
But it takes us a lot of practice to get there, and then to redirect the attention back is a process.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah, I'm just so happy and so grateful.
Yeah, that's it. Happy and grateful.
Yeah.
Scott, did you?
That's so relieving, that orientation, that which turns. We already have it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is very relieving.
We're so caught up in that.
Yeah.
That was such a good example. I feel so reassured and loved by that, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
It takes all that. I can relate to that, or at least my projection, like that kind of desperateness or anxiousness or...
Yes, I had it. I'm going to lose it.
Yeah.
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 Well, you can't lose it.
You can't lose it. That's what's
wrong. Yeah, it's always there.
Yeah.
I mean, always... And I don't know if this is your experience, God, but I think practice teaches me the recognition of... being in the process, right? Being in the process of coming home starts with feeling like I'm not at home.
Uh-huh.
And then searching for home.
Uh-huh.
And then eventually I will come home.
Yeah.
Right? I know that I'm in the process of where I feel separated from home right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it's just that whole everything's working together.
Everything is working, yeah.
Yeah.
And that there's enough momentum in our practice, I think, collectively, for home to call us back. That's what we relax into.
Uh-huh.
No longer, it's what we're talking about with Koya, that even if I'm swimming desperately out there, home will call me back.
And I'll be, practice is far enough along that I'll hear that calling and hear that fish.
And we'll call
and respond as we'll respond.
Yeah. You will respond.
Because that's what's going on all the time.
Yes.
All day.
Yes. And it's large frequencies of absence from home and very short distances from that. But whatever happens, the connection is never lost because that's what you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's... It's interesting I've seen that because I think that's what's been going on for me in the last... day.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Since I had this huge shift with this physical energy, it was just like a surrender. Because mm-hmm. I didn't really have any other choice.
Yeah.
Is what it felt like.
And I think that, going back to what Kevin said, sometimes we're so stuck in our position.
Totally.
That the suffering has to increase to the point where we'll say, I give in.
Mm-hmm.
I give in.
Yeah.
And I can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
And then all of the power of the universe will do it for you. But if you're standing there with your arms crossed, with your back turned, and holding onto the rock saying, nothing's going to move me, then the extent of the pressure that has to be applied for you to let go has to be that proportional.
Yeah. And then you just feel super grateful, like, thanks for doing that. I mean, I wish I didn't have to do that, but... Yeah,
but we did. It was for that Kevin. It was necessary because otherwise you would be budged an inch.
Yeah. What was interesting, I noticed in that process that was going on yesterday and the day before probably, my whole life, was there actually was practice all the way through. There was actually asking for assistance. There was checking in with the mentor. But right alongside was I have to maintain this survival.
Yes.
And then what I kept dropping in was that Aldous Huxley quote about like the very suffering or pain is reassuring proof that there is a me.
Yeah.
Like, that was the only, like, it was kind of like, that's the only point of the holding on right now. Yeah. Is kind of what I kept hearing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I love this because, I don't know, this is the awareness of what it means to be in an awakening process, right? It's my experience that at some of the time, it's pure bliss. Then some of the time, it's pure misery. Most of the time, it's a combination of the two. Because I'm always in the process of being worn away.
Yeah.
And all that I'm experiencing is a proportional difference between ego and non-ego.
A proportional difference, maybe.
Like, meaning that today, 70% of your experience in that road that I'm walking, 70% of it happens to be identification, and 30% happens to be the awareness of the perfection of all that is.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, it's 100% the perfection of all that is. Mm-hmm. And I'm just being negotiated in that way. Mm-hmm. Someone I was looking at said, energy is not transformation. What is transforming is person. Energy is the means.
Uh-huh. Right? Like a planning.
But what's going on in the transformation is that of the person. The personality is dropping and the authenticity is being shaped up, right? Mm-hmm. And so that is my experience. I am being worked on.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I think that's, yeah, and you're right, you can feel those different proportions. I feel like it just took a big shave off, and I just feel like this relief.
Yes.
And there was a shift that happened in a medical appointment, and I got out. I mean, it was literally like the framework for what this physical stuff is going on was a complete problem orientation. And it was actually creating, I mean, there is something, but it was creating a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually making it, I mean, it's so much better from the reframing, which essentially was, one possibility was, well, it could be that you're actually now loading over your big toe, which you haven't done for years, and that's why the foot was breaking down. And now you are, and there's a point where it's not quite strong enough, and it's kind of buckling over, and that's causing this, and that's causing that. And it was like, what? You think this awful thing, is it because this tendon came out of place, and now the other tendons are tearing apart, and I'm going to be crippled? You mean that was actually progress was happening, and that I just didn't realize there was that process?
Mm-hmm.
But when it dries, projected, dropped in for that person, and they said it to me and they showed it, I was like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I got out and I tried to record and I couldn't even say anything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it was just so, how could that, so completely different, the same body, the same sensations, just, and that felt like being worked on.
Yeah.
It just got a big chunk off, and I just felt really humbled. Mm-hmm. Since then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's carrying over into other things.
Uh-huh, say more.
Well, like, I had an RL class and I was facilitating, and I knew beforehand there was this pressure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, there's all these people, like, it's not the participants and so much, but these other people who are in training, and so I've got to do a certain standard of something, and there's going to be, maybe there'll be these clips, and, you know, there's just this pressure. You know, and like, this stuff is just not, it's not helpful, it's not necessary. I was aware of it, but it still kind of came in the facilitation. There was a pressing of trying to make the facilitation points. And there was some intuition, that's what was going on, and to end these interactions, because I think I was pressing to try to have that point be made.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a little bit of that overriding that, which is a very common thing.
Mm-hmm.
With smoking chainsaws, with feet, with there's an intuition to back off or just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And just, but I did see that, you know, and then I got to talk about it in this coaching afterwards, which is amazing. And I just felt, I just said thank you.
Yeah.
Because that was going on, and it's nice to be that it got acknowledged. And next time I'm in it, I'll be able to drop it sooner.
Yeah.
You know, and I just felt instead of self hate, you know, about it, it just felt like thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, because what we don't there's some way by which we don't realize how much we're identified with what we're not.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right? Because that's what we keep going back to. It was me. I did not listen to the intuition and overrode it. But that's not true. The programming is what overrode it.
I am that which is aware of all of that.
That's right. And until the identification with what overrides decreases, I won't be able to recognize that I was being overridden, not that I was overriding. Right? We want to take, that proportion has to shift. And all of the planning that happens to us happens so that we can finally get to the place of realizing that was not me.
Yeah. And it seems like that's where you got to get into self-hate.
Yes.
Because that's the only way that happens, right?
Yes. Yeah. You keep taking ownership of being the thing that's standing in your way, rather than realizing that there is a thing that is standing in my way, and I'm not it.
Yeah.
And there is nothing attached to being controlled by it. There is no blame attached to being overridden.
Yeah.
Because that is the force that's dominant until it isn't.
Yeah.
And that, as you said, your practice is to keep choosing not to be overridden. And at some point, you won't be.
Yeah, well, I mean, and it's practice.
Yeah.
And I just feel like I saw big chunks of it.
Yeah.
You know, there's the falling off, and there's the surrendering, there's the letting go, and there's seeing how that's possible, and how good you feel when that happens.
Right.
And then, you know, there's like, and then there's, but the more you see that, and there's just, and I think the more I see, quote, him, like the person, and how precious, I mean, all these people, all these persons are, you just, you're happy to let go of that, owning that identification.
Yes, that's right. You're happy to let go of owning the identification.
Yeah,
because it's not the person.
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything about anybody.
And that ability to go is so all right. Whatever it takes to save the human being, I submit it. To me, the image is crucifixion.
Yeah.
Right? Christ went on that cross and got nailed and tortured and whatever else. But that was what was required to save the human being. Mm-hmm. That's what we go through. In order for that human being to be saved, the ego has to be crucified. Mm-hmm. Whatever it takes.
Yeah. My favorite part about that, that's interesting you say that, because it's so inspiring, even though whatever it sounds like, but, you know, he gets warned. Jesus gets warned. Like, they're going to kill you.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, that's my Father's will, and that's beyond my way.
That's right.
And it's like, oh my gosh, I hope to have an ounce of that kind of...
But you do, Scott. Mm-hmm. You're here.
As soon as I said that, I'm saying it. So.
Yeah. And so, what you feel is the gratitude that crucifixion happened, because it released the love, it released the human being. It was painful, it was torturous, but it was necessary. Does it have to be painful, torturous, necessary? Yes. Because otherwise, it doesn't seem to work any other way. The ego cannot be loved out of existence.
Yeah.
But the human being can be loved into existence. The ego can only be ignored out of existence.
Ignored out of existence, yeah.
Yeah.
Two more quick things.
Yeah, please.
The particles of energy you're talking to. Just can feel the delight.
Yes, isn't it?
Yeah, and when you said that, and I had this image of, like, everyone here is these particles of energy. And that, as we're talking in group, they're just bubbling around. And this image of, like, laying in the middle of the meditation hall and all of that being absorbed. And then my body just dissolved.
It's a delightful image.
Yeah. And then the other funny thing is, it's cold outside. I think we're probably in the 30s right now.
It's been a lot colder.
But it's gotten 1 degree warmer in here since we started group while it's 30s outside. Particles of energy.
Yeah.
All and the furnace hasn't gone on. I mean, it's going on, but it's going on for the kitchen.
Oh, what a wonderful thought.
Yeah. I mean, we're literally little furnaces in here heating up this room.
Yes.
And then I just have to say one thing about the food that we eat. It's been, I mean, it's always really delicious, but I've just been really appreciating it. I mean, how really lucky are we? Mm-hmm. You know, Sally does the shopping and the cooking, and we have these two stews today, and both times it's just like I'm having these conversations with myself, like, oh my gosh, this is so good. And it's just like, yeah, I mean, if you don't think that you're loved, just come and sit down and eat here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and it puts us in that, it's a, that place again that when we're in the process of love, right, which the release that you're experiencing.
Yeah.
From that system that is oppressive and painful, there's a way in which we're delighted by.
Yeah.
We're present to how it is, not
exactly.
How it isn't.
Yeah.
Right? And it's a delight. The stew tastes better. I feel loved.
Yeah.
The particles are dancing. The energy is going up in the room.
Yeah.
That orientation of being able to observe that is only available when I'm not caught in that heavy negativity of. None of this is, everything's just miserable and awful and problematic.
Yeah, that's really, actually eating is a really good practice of seeing where you are.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of course, I mean, we always buy good food and it's always cooked mindfully. And you know, so those times where I'm eating, I'm often and I don't even like really taste my food. Well, I wouldn't be able to enjoy the how good it is.
Yeah.
Unless you're...
You're here?
You're here.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
Well, I was just going to comment, as we so often do, about how whatever seems to be going on for one person is going on kind of for everybody.
Uh-huh.
And it's not like that tonight. I've been talking to the 72-year-old, and the notion of saying to the body, "What, wherever you are, I'm right there with you," is just brilliant. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just, that's just. Life-changing right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to be with whatever it is. It's life-changing because it's so radical. It's so radical, right? We're not conditioned to be that way.
Yeah. And I can repeat it, the point about I can't even see I watch a thought process happen and right now I feel fine. And I feel like I can be all very spiritual and correct and get the, you know, get a handle on. And what I know is when I don't feel well, when I'm in pain or I feel sick, it's really hard to find, to just be in that place. But I think what you were saying tonight is just sitting here and looking at how when I'm in pain, it's not going to go that way. It's not, I'm going to struggle instead of, am I making any sense?
Right.
Yeah. Will you say,
Will
you put it in your words again?
Well, that when we are in pain, we're in pain. We're not supposed to be spiritually ebullient in the moment.
What I'm saying is, sitting here now, thinking about how it's going to begin,
yeah,
based on how it's been in
the past, right. Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's really not helpful at all.
It's not helpful because the worst. So my analogy of that is the person in my life that has meant the most to me is going to die sometime, and I'll be forsaken, and it would be the worst thing that ever happened to me, right? Well, the worst thing is happening now because I'm having the experience of what it's going to be like now of feeling forsaken. When that thing happens, God knows, I might be thinking about my dinner. Right? And so the worst of the experience is happening in the moment the voices are talking to me about it. And if I can be with that, if I can redirect my attention in that, that's where I want to practice for the moment when it actually happens. Because if I can practice being in love in that moment, I can whatever it throws at, because the only experience I ever have to survive is the worst case scenario in my head. Nothing is worse than that. And so every worst case scenario that is being played in my head, I'm having the experience of the worst case in that moment. And I practice being with her in that place. Not abandoning her in that place. I'm right here with you, June. In this worst place. And we're fine.
Yeah. Okay, you said it better than me. The other piece of it. A couple months ago, I found what I think we refer to as dark and human. I just saw what that was, just, and it was wonderful anyway. And there was a sensation that went with it that was wonderful, and it felt like a presence. And it felt like love. And of course, with time that fades, that sensation fades. So the assumption has been, where did love go? Mm. What happened? The assumption didn't show up in those words. It was just a little kind of more like a disappointment. Mm. Mm-hmm. And so I looked at that a lot during the New Year's retreat. And the message that I got was, of course, no, love didn't go anywhere. The sensation, yes, it's not there. That place, that thing that you were, that sensation in your body, that's all it was, period. Every sensation is love. Mm. That there is something here that there is consciousness. Experience. That's love.
Yes.
A life or true nature or God or whatever you want to call it.
That thou art.
Yeah.
Well, I think Anna touched on it, right? That there's a way in which what happens, and it's that the felt experience, you find love and then you're out of it after, because something fades, and that's how we describe it. Because what tends to happen is we objectify the experience rather than what Anna was pointing to, and what you realized is that experience was just what noticed the feeling, not the feeling itself. So whatever is noticing, whatever the feeling is love.
Right. Yeah.
That's what I need to come back to. Not What's noticing the absence of the feeling? Even what's noticing the absence of the feeling is what's noticing. And it has various qualities and textures and frequencies and amplitudes, and it registers everything. And therefore, instead of falling for a specific experience as the only experience of it, every experience is an experience of what notices. And if I can stay in the awareness of that, I'll be a happy human being. Because that really allows me to be with whatever it is. Right. 72-year-old bodies or experiences of authenticity. Yeah.
Well, there were several other things, but I can't think of them.
Well, that must be life telling us it's 8:30. So, thank you, everybody.